today I'll be talking about the evolution of sexually oriented traits in the genus of Palaria and addressing some questions that I've encountered in my ongoing revision. The family Staphylinidae are potentially the most diverse beetle lineage with approximately 50,000 described species. The subfamily Omaliinae are considered a relic group representing a previous diversity, and therefore there are many small and highly autapomorphic genera. The genus of Palaria is composed of 6 species, 3 Nearctic, the top row, and 3 Palearctic species, which is the bottom row. These are small beetles, about 2 to 3 millimeters in size, and the species of this genus are rare in collections, except for Megarthroides, which are abundant on flowers in the spring, where there are facultative feeders on pollen, and Pygmaea, found in forest leaf litter. Both Megarthroides and Pygmaea are relatively widely distributed, but the other species are limited in distribution, which may partially be an artifact of inadequate collecting. There does not seem to be a single habitat preference for members of this genus, and may also be found in birds' nests and tree holes. Except for flowers, all these habitat types are some of the least explored, and this is probably largely the reason why they are thought to be such rare beetles. This is a simple type of Ediagus identified in the genus. Regardless of its simplicity, the internal sac is extremely complex, with different sized teeth and possibly sclerites. Hamada and Setii are the only species that I know to have this genitalic type, but I am yet to examine the genitalia of Alitasia, and its genitalic type is unknown. Also, Hamada is so far the only species known with the apex of the paramyres emarginated, and unfortunately I have been unable to personally avert the internal sacs, and I've only been able to observe those that have averted themselves during the dissection process. So I'm at that point in time, I'm still uncertain if the internal sac had fully inverted itself. So a reliable method in inverting the internal sacs would allow me to fully understand the complexity and the extent of genitalic lock and key, which I'll propose later. Here I show 2 examples of the complex type of genitalia in Megarthroides and the undescribed species. Pygmaea also has the complex genitalic type, and again, the genitalia of Alitasia is unknown. This is the drawing of a partially averted internal sac of the undescribed species. I now point out here what I'm calling the clasping sclerite, which is a plate-like structure that flips around a transverse line, more or less across its middle when the internal sac is averted. In the undescribed species, this is a wishbone-shaped structure, but in Megarthroides, the clasping sclerite does not have a wishbone shape, but is a contiguously solid plate. When the clasping sclerite comes into contact with flips over, it comes into contact with a set of teeth, which is indicated by green arrows. I believe that together the clasping sclerite and the associated teeth function either in clasping onto a reciprocating sclerite within the female bursa, or as a self-recognition system that allows the males to identify that the internal sac has in fact averted itself. Here is the female genitalia of Hamada, and an enlarged image of a partially or fully averted internal sac of Megarthroides. The female genitalia in Palaria is highly variable between species, especially in what I'm calling the stent sclerite. This sclerite, viewed through the membrane and genitalic segments, looks different from its actual appearance, which is more complex. The stent sclerite, composed of sheet-like sclerites stacked on top of one another, are held together by membrane and can be dissected out as an individual entity. I believe this sclerite functions somewhat like a spring. When the male internal sac is averted within the bursa, it expands into the stent sclerite. As the internal sac enlarges, so does the stent sclerite. I also hypothesize that the male internal sac and the stent sclerite are lock and key, and the sclerite on the male internal sac, indicated by a green arrow, may fit into the window, also indicated by a green arrow visible in the stent sclerite. These are 2 examples of hind tibial modifications in the males of Palaria. Setii also has modified hind tibia similar to Hamada, but due to limited material at hand, it's not shown here. Because these structures are present only in the males, they are most likely playing a role in copulation. Omaliines are generally robust and inflexible in staphylinid standards and mount the females to mate, and the modified CD on the 4 tarsi of the males are probably used in holding onto the females. Given that Palaria males are presumably mounting the females, it seems intuitive to hypothesize that the males are somehow holding the females with these modified tibia during copulation, but I propose an alternative hypothesis, and that these structures are used in stimulating the females during copulation. Because Hamada females have no structure capable of receiving the tooth on the male tibia, and the robust body of the undescribed males are most likely keeping the legs from wrapping around the females during copulation to hold her, my alternative hypothesis, I believe, is more acceptable. These are two images of the hind leg and enlarged trochanter of Pygmaea males. Similar to the modified hind tibia in the previous slide, the enlarged trochanter is presumably used in stimulating the females. The males of Pygmaea are known to be polymorphic in the shape of the trochanter, and the other morph has a greater margination on the interior side, which is indicated by the yellow arrow. I've not been able to observe the second morph, and therefore any functional or taxonomic significance is unknown. This is a sternal horn present on the apex of sternite 7 in the males of Pygmaea. There is no structure on the dorsal surface of the females that indicate that the sternal horn is used in holding the female. Therefore, again, I also believe that this structure is used in stimulating the females. This image is a pegcetal patch at the apex of sternite 7 in the males of Hemata. Setii also have pegcetii, but these are present at the apex of sternite 6 and 7. Again, I hypothesize that pegcetii are used in stimulation. And I would like you to focus on the yellow circle. And this is an enlargement of the circle area. You will see that the pegcetii are you'll see pegcetii very similar to those of Hemata. I hypothesize that these pegcetii now present in Hemata, Setii, and Pygmaea are homologous. I also hypothesize that the ancestor of Pygmaea, similar to Hemata and Setii, had a pegcetal patch at the apex of sternite 7, and with the development of the sternal horn beginning at the base of the pegcetal patch, these pegcetii were eventually displaced and decreased in number. The pegcetii in Pygmaea are fewer in number and grow in a slightly dorsal direction, indicating the possibility that his previous role has been taken over by the sternal horn and may now serve little or no function or some new function altogether. This is an approximate distributional map of the six species of Apalaria. The three Nearctic species live in symmetry and most likely to a greater degree than shown in the map due to inadequate collecting. Pygmaea and Setii live together on a small Mediterranean island, Corsica, indicated by the two arrows, and Alutatia most likely lives sympatrically with Pygmaea, but very little distributional data is available for that part of the world. Current knowledge places Setii and Hemata as sister species due to similarities in male secondary modifications and genitalic type. This sister relationship demonstrates that the radiation is an old one, and a genitalic lock and key is not a mechanism for reinforcing species boundaries. If members of Apalaria are not interbreeding now, they most likely will not be interbreeding anytime soon, and assuming that the current diversity and distribution of the genus is a fraction of what it used to be. Still, the exact purpose of this genitalic lock and key is unknown. There may be some sort of cryptic female choice being exhibited, or as the traditional thought puts it, the lock and key mechanism may be some sort of species recognition. There's also some sort of sexual selection occurring that is causing the runaway evolution in male secondary modifications that I've discussed earlier. All this leads to show that there is a great lack of knowledge of insect genitalia and copulation altogether. And as systemists, we observe genitalia frequently, and we must address these sorts of questions and possibilities so that researchers may pick up where we have left off. I would like to make the following acknowledgments, and if you have any experience with sexual dimorphism that I've discussed here today, or experience in inverting internal sacs of small beetles, I would love to talk later. So, thank you.